Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 272. I'm Kevin Larrabee and I'm going to be joined by Marianne Kane in just a couple of seconds. But first, I just want to run through some quick upcoming guest announcements and some news and notes. First off, thank you to everyone that donated to the podcast after last week. It is, it is greatly appreciated, and the movement has been made into putting together some really great stuff for you guys. I'm actually booking some stuff to go see Dan John to film some stuff out there at his place in Utah, which should be amazing. And this is the kind of cool stuff that we can do with your support. Also, a lot of people gave suggestions on how to help, continue to have revenue going in. I'm working on some of that stuff, but for the time being, continued donations are greatly appreciated. You can go to thefitcast.com, and on that right side, there's a little PayPal button where you can donate through there using a PayPal account or a credit card. And again, it really means a lot if you guys continue to support the show until we get something cool going. The one thing I can say about that is I'm trying to put something together where if you did make a donation beforehand, you will be benefited by doing that, because it will be going towards this upcoming thing that I'm working on, which I think you guys are really going to like. I've been talking to some people about it. They think it's a really good idea. So I'm going to do my best to get that going as fast as possible. But like I said, in the meantime, donations are going to be the best way to keep supporting the show. So like I said, if you have enjoyed the podcast for these last 6 or 7 years and the hundreds of episodes, and want to help support the show, that would be the best way to do it. And again, thank you so much for everyone that's been so generous to do so. It's been crazy to get some emails and some really touching emails from people saying what the show has kind of meant to them. Literally, like me sitting at my computer and starting to tear up reading some of this stuff. It's really been, really powerful. But some good stuff. We got some great upcoming guests. Like literally, I've been going all weekend sending out emails to people trying to set things up. Next is going to be Tony Gentilcoeur that I'm interviewing this week. So if you have questions for Tony to talk about or topics to talk about, send those in to questions@thefitcast.com. Go to thefitcast.com's contact page or hit me up on Facebook and Twitter for those. I'll be making posts about those shortly. Also, Jim Wendler is going to be coming back on the show of 531 fame. Jim is an incredibly brilliant guy, one of the best programmers out there. Just has some fantastic stuff to talk about, so I can't wait to get him back on. Nia Shanks is going to be coming back on the show. We're going to be doing a follow-up from the initial stuff that we talked about with her. Also, Tom Venuto, I've been harassing through Twitter and continue to do it. If you want to harass Tom on Twitter to make sure he gets back on the show, I'm always on him. He's one of my favorite guests. He's just got such great content and a brilliant mind for this kind of stuff for body transformations. Also, Eric Cressy is going to be coming on in mid-October, so heads up on that. And then Ben Bruno, who we talked about in the past about getting on, he's going to be coming on. If you haven't checked out Ben's stuff on T-Nation, he's had tons of articles up on T-Nation that you can check out. But the guy is just a really, he's a great coach, and he has created some awesome exercises for you to vary things up in the gym. Finally, Lee and John and myself are getting together. John is back in Saudi Arabia, so we're going to be getting together to do a podcast soon. He's got vacation next week, but hopefully the week after next, we're going to record that and do a roundtable and just do one of those every month or two, or every 6 to 8 weeks, just to kind of, people want it. So we're going to give it to them every once in a while. It's still going to be predominantly interviews here on out, just to give you guys straight up content. But that is coming. And also, keep in mind, go to the fitcast.com and sign up for the newsletter, because I'm sending out newsletters whenever we have like a guest announcement, so you can submit your questions by just replying to those emails. Also, another cool thing that we're trying to do is if someone does have something to promote, getting some kind of special offer for you guys, out there. So I think that's it. All right, so we're going to be talking with Marianne right now. Stick around. Here it comes. With me right now is Marianne Kane of MyOhMyTV.com. Again, I am apologizing in advance. We were supposed to do this interview a couple months back. Things got crazy, and I'm bad with email replies and stuff like that. But Marianne, welcome to the show finally.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So, I mean, we got a ton of stuff to talk about. And the first thing that I did want to bring up is that there's so many times we get questions about getting into the industry or, you know, potentially, you know, people who just, you know, they listen to the podcast, they love fitness and nutrition or rehab, and they think, you know, I really don't like my desk job or whatever job they have right now. And you kind of made that change a couple months back. Can you talk a little bit about that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time coming. I still am a registered nurse, but that was, I suppose, my trade. And I was a nurse for 7 years. And over the last 3.5 years, I began becoming, or since I actually qualified, I started a journey into fitness. But in the last 3.5, I'd started a fitness blog to really just document that journey and also try to reach out to people who were maybe in a similar situation. I really enjoyed training at home with kettlebells. So that's sort of where that idea came from. And I really was aware of all the confusing information there was out there. So a long story short, it became a bit of a passion. And I realized that I really took to it a lot better than I actually felt more passionate about that than I did my night job. Actually, I was a night shift nurse. So it sort of ran parallel to my nursing for the 3 years, and it became that my training career kind of took off, and I became more interested in pursuing it more seriously and getting certified and reaching out, building up a business as well, and found that I was able to really positively impact on people's lives. In a way that satisfied me as well. It was more in keeping with my character, my personality, and the things that I enjoyed doing. People could see the passion that I had for my job. And it wasn't that I didn't enjoy nursing. I just didn't enjoy all aspects of it, and it became quite draining. So when you're kind of in a job and you're like, you have to weigh up what's making you happy. And it took a long time for me to make that jump, because it's a huge risk. You're leaving a secure job, which a lot of people would die to have, like that sort of secure, it's well enough paid, but all of that to risk jumping out and going into a business that is just getting off the ground, and you just have to have a leap of faith. At some point, you have to jump the hurdle and just do it. And I make it sound easy, but it really wasn't. And even since then, making that jump, I've looked back at times and gone, what on earth did I do that for? But long term, it's going to serve me well, because I stuck to what I value the most. And it is where I'm not feeling like I have to go to a job. I actually really feel it as part of my life. And it's not, I'm not being stressed about it. I am enjoying it. I'm trying to make it better. And I have control of that, instead of, you know, being under a whole load of rules and stuff within and sort of other people. And there's only so much you can bring to a patient's life, and you're spread out. You know, you're one nurse for 9 people. Whereas if I can give like my attention to one person, maybe less people, but in a more sort of personal way with my individual clients, that is. And obviously on my website, I reach out to a greater audience. But that's sort of, I suppose, the journey so far in terms of that. I think that anyone sitting who has like an inkling for fitness is always to learn more. And the more you learn about, I suppose the greatest advice I could ever give anyone is to find a niche that reflects their character the most. Because if I wasn't personally feeling what I was doing, I was just trying to appeal to a whole bunch of people just for the sake of, say, making more money, or if my reasons weren't right with me, then nobody would appeal to that. Nobody could relate to that. So I think that's very important, to have that specific passion that you can really convey to the people who eventually come across you, say they're searching for something specific. So always have a speciality in mind, and really just pursue that and be the best at it, or be as good as you can at it. Because there's always going to be people who will relate to you. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, is just having a connection with somebody.
Yeah, and the great thing about this whole internet thing we have going on now is that you can get access to great information, you can reach such a wide audience, and it really is something, if you're willing to put the time into, you can definitely do it and make it happen. It's something you've been doing a great job with.
Thank you.
Let's get into the questions. We got a ton of stuff in, and really what you kind of hit on a couple things before. What I would love to kind of start talking about is the training at home, because, again, you know, people are not necessarily always looking for excuses, but it's always great to have fewer excuses not to train. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, your thoughts behind training at home, like the, you know, the equipment that you like to have around, and just kind of like the basic setup for programming and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great thing because you can start off with absolute minimum and you can build on it. So you never have to start out big, like getting a whole room kitted out. Sometimes even that can be a little bit overwhelming, especially, you know, if you're starting out training just in general. So how I started was with two kettlebells and my body weight, and I managed to put together a whole load of workouts and things that I was able to do just with those two different weights. And that's why I generally advise people to start out, because if people feel that they have to like construct this whole big gym, it's going to cost them a lot of money, it's going to cost them a lot of space. And, you know, maybe there's people living in smaller apartments. I know I have a couple of clients who do, and it's very appealing to them just to have a couple of kettlebells lying about, maybe a Step or something, or a TRX or Jungle Gym or whatever you use. But I think you can get so far with body weight, but it's nice to mix in a little bit of extra resistance. And sometimes kettlebells, I know, and especially like the suspension trainers, are good to have for progressing your body weight exercises a little bit further, adding a little bit more variety in so that you're getting a balanced workout. And I talked about this recently on my blog, sort of in the last 6 months or so, on how to create a balanced workout. And just so you're hitting all the muscles, you know, if you prefer full body workouts, then this is how you would put one together. You get more bang for your buck that way, I think, that if you're doing this, the sort of full body approach. And a lot of a lot of women actually prefer that approach, I think, because maybe they're at home. They like training at home because they've got kids. So a very short workout, maybe first thing in the morning, they can fit in, get their full body workout in maybe 3 or 4 times a week. And you're wanting to hit, you know, your squats, your deadlift pattern, you know, maybe a kettlebell swing, getting your hip hinge in there. You're going to have an upper body pushing exercise, lots of push-ups or overhead press. And then into your upper body rowing exercises of pulls, inverted rows. And, you know, if you do eventually get a pull-up bar, then it's a great challenge to have, you know, a goal in itself just to master your first and then second and third and whatever, you know, your chin-ups and things like that. And then some sort of a core exercise, maybe some glute work as well, lots of accessory work. But you can design a workout so that it's fun, so you're not just going through the motions type of thing, or you're not really knowing what to do. So I think that's sort of what I really wanted to aim at, you know, with my blog, is here's a few ideas for you. This is if you're stuck in what to do and you don't know where to start, this is a good way to sort of put together a balanced approach. If you're, you know, often if you're just doing bodyweight workouts, you hit the quads a lot, you hit the, you know, the pushing exercises a lot, and then you're kind of stuck to what to do for, you know, your posterior chain. You're not really getting it loaded enough. And then also once you progress to a certain level, how do you really load the lower body? And then you're sort of can very easily run into all the plyometric stuff. And then for a lot of people who are maybe trying to train from home, and maybe they're overweight, they're not, you know, they're running the risk of injury and things like that. So, I mean, with kettlebells, there's always, with any exercise, there's always a risk of injuring yourself. So I do always say to try to get training of some description, even just to cover the basics, a one-to-one with somebody or within a class environment where you're actually taught the proper technique. Because although I do have tutorials on my site, it's not the same thing as training with somebody in person. But I mean, for setting up from home, those are just basic. I mean, even if you just have a couple of dumbbells, you can adapt my type of workouts to sort of appeal to that. If you have a barbell, I have a few barbell workouts as well. There's sort of there's anything you can do at home. And what actually from Get Glutes, which is another website that we'll probably talk about later, but it's full body training, but with a specific focus on glute training. And that's myself, Kelly Davis, and Brett Contreras. We've put that together. And what we've realized from that is that a lot of the members actually do have pretty well kitted out home gyms, which I am envious of. Like, with power racks and everything. Like, it's just amazing what people have. You know, it seems to be very popular now to be training at home. And I have several clients who have like rooms set up and things like that. So I think it's nice. But again, where do you start? So start with just maybe a mat, a couple of kettlebells, one slightly heavier to appeal, you know, to load the lower body a little more, a lighter one for the upper body. And then after that, once you're getting into that sort of groove of training at home, then decide whether or not you want to progress that and add a little bit more here and there, a step, a pull-up bar, you know, something like that. So you don't need to get it all at once, but it's something that can be built on.
Oh, for sure. And I think the big thing there is, like you said, making sure you have some kind of instruction to kind of go off of. Otherwise, you're going to be almost aimless. But the great thing about training at home is you can blast your music too and do whatever you want and have a great time. For me, it's my living room. My living room is where I get all my kettlebell work in and chin up bars at the bathroom. So,
yeah.
It's it's a great little setup. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, but dedicated glute training, which you guys and Brett have been talking a lot about, and that's obviously something when you're talking about the female demographic that is desirable to make sure you're getting in the proper glute training now with the extremely popular, like, yoga pants and Lululemon type stuff now, even more so. So can you talk a little bit about, the dedicated glute training? Because we got some questions in the mailbag asking about, how you make sure you're not doing too much, hip dominant training and overdoing it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just in my brief overview of how you would structure a balanced routine, I mean, that's important. Yes, I reckon it would probably be pretty difficult to overtrain the glutes. But if that is a concern, then, I mean, you think about it, you're hitting them in different directions. You're hitting them different ways. So, whatever exercise you're doing, you should be engaging your glutes, and you are engaging your core, and all of these things are happening throughout your entire workout. So it's just how focused it is on the glutes. So when we say glute specific training, what that is you're using your squat variations, you're using your deadlift variations, but you're also bridging. So while you're hitting your glutes in all those three different movements, but then you also want to hit the external rotation and abduction functions of the glutes. So these are more sort of accessory exercises, and they're generally pretty light exercises like band rotations, hip band abductions and things like that. They're not overly loaded, but in terms of the hip extension exercises, like maybe your back extensions, your glute bridges and hip thrusts, all of those are put in a way that is considerate of what the rest of the program looks like. So you're never overtraining any one part. But in each workout, you are going to be hitting the glutes in some way. So just like you're hitting the quads in some way, because even when you're doing hip thrusts, while that is an excellent exercise for the glutes, you're also using your quads again. You're also using your hamstrings again. So what is the imbalance that we're talking about? Things are working together in that movement. So you're still getting that balanced approach, because you're never really just isolating the glutes as you might think. So it's not like you're going to grow them ridiculously out of proportion with the rest of your body, or that there's going to have a knock-on effect on your movement patterns. If anything, the glutes need a little more work, because they tend to be a little more lazy, especially whenever people are getting started out. And I think that that question led on to progressions and regressions for people learning glute exercises. And it would just be the same, you'd apply to any other exercise. You want to learn about the movement pattern itself, what it's for, how it works. So like the glute bridge, you would start off just with body weight till you master the movement pattern. And over time, you get good at adding more reps to that. So you're adding your strength and also a little bit of endurance and stability and all of that. And then you start to load it up. So you wouldn't load it up straight away. And then you can progress that even further by increasing the range of movement. By doing that, you elevate the shoulders and that becomes the hip thrust. And you do the same thing there. Eventually, you start loading that. Then you can do different variations of that and do single leg. You can do foot and shoulder elevations just to increase the range of movement more. Play with different tempos, all these sorts of things. You're hitting the muscles in different ways. It's not the same type of training over and over again. But we design and specific, you know, get glutes. The three coaches get together each month and we decide how best to structure the program. So it's not overly heavy training throughout the entire week, that we balance it all out that way. And I think that's where knowing what the glute, how the glutes work and how their different functions as well, but also how they work in conjunction with the rest of the body is important. So, I mean, overtraining or imbalances, I don't know what that really means in terms of, you know, how that would even be defined in glute training. I know you can get imbalances between one side and the other, but then that would lead on to, you know, maybe some more single work. You'd maybe do a little more activation on one side than another, perhaps during the week in between training. But I mean, I think that answers the question. I don't know, like sort of covers the my thinking behind it anyway.
Oh, for sure. And like there's, we look at the population out there, there's way more of an issue with anterior pelvic tilt issues that are going to be needing correcting anyway. So like you said, it's very hard to find someone that is doing too much hip dominant training in their life.
Yeah.
Let's continue moving on. One, another thing that we got a question from Vanessa wanting to ask about an article that you recently shared on Facebook that showed criticism towards so-called fit-spiration photographs. For people out there who don't know, it's like the photographs of like fit is the new, or strong is the new, you know, sexy and all that stuff. I mean, people have been posting them all over Facebook, and that is the new thing that I guess people are using for motivation for getting stronger, which is great. It's getting more people to train and stuff like that. But she wanted to know to what extent you think that these types of photographs and messages can have a negative impact on a lot of women and men. Have you had any evidence of these negative psychological, emotional effects in your work as a trainer or through your blog? What can be done to counterbalance this phenomenon?
That's a good question. So if you'd asked me this question about 2 years ago, the answer would have been different. Probably would have been different even just a year ago, but there was a whole explosion of sort of, you know, female training and female strength training. And in order to get across messages of this being an unthreatening thing, then it's important to say that I can totally see the reasons why these sorts of messages are coming out. It's to try to encourage and inspire people. But what struck me about the article that I shared was that while that may be the intent behind it, often the message that's written and the photograph that's shown can contradict each other. It's almost like saying, well, say, for example, if you think that strong is a new sexy or whatever it is, that, well, sexy is subjective for a start, and in many ways, strength is relative. So how can you really make a message out of that that appeals to anyone outside of the population that maybe, you know, is within the fitness industry. Sort of, it kind of works, but only within a certain audience. But if you took that message to somebody who is maybe struggling to lose weight, or they're struggling with their strength and what they feel that their strength must be or what they must look like, and that this image and that photo, that's sexy and that's strong, and they don't look anything like that, then how is that going to make them feel? It's just exactly the same thing. Although it has a positive reason behind it to try to inspire people, often it can leave you feeling that you're never going to measure up, you're never going to reach that. So I think it's just taught me, like, over the last couple of years, I probably would have posted some fitspiration or whatever they're called, photographs, and I was thinking that that's a good thing. Even a couple of photos of myself that I had, you know, taken, or videos and stuff, and saying, like, strength is beautiful and all of this stuff, which I think it is, but what type of strength are we talking about? There's so many different ways to be strong, not just in how you, certainly in how you look. Because if you take one of the good examples from that particular article, I can't even now, don't ask me which blog it was from that I shared it from, but it's on my Facebook page, that it was showing the difference between the strength, or the person, the model that was used in the actual photograph with this message on it, versus who was, by the way, still skinny. Then, and it's not saying that skinny can't be strong, but then there was it showed what he calls strong woman lifting like a million tires, and because she doesn't fit the image of what is clearly deemed to be what sexy is, then it can have a negative impact. Like, why not show people like that on a get it a bit more even? But like, no matter, then I think, well, no matter what you do, you can't please everyone anyway, and the whole point is to inspire. And no matter what pictures you post for inspiration, it will only appeal to a certain amount of people. Like, I'll never inspire everyone, so I think the potential there is there for anything to have a negative impact if you're insecure about something. So I think then it can turn around on you. It returns around on you because you need to feel confident in where you're at and grateful in where you're at. And I think that's something that actually recently Nia Shanks posted an article on that, how to be the most awesome and strongest version of yourself. One of the video I posted for that was just saying that in order to do that, you have to recognize what you've got right now, not where you want to be or what you want to get rid of in order to feel better. Because if you don't have the ability to recognize when something good happens in the first place, then you're never going to reach your goal, because you'll never recognize that you're there. So in terms of those types of, I think we need to be very careful in what sort of messages that we're putting out, what defines strength, what defines beautiful, and what defines sexy, all of these things, because it's so varied. And I think that I posted a picture of myself, and it was the message on it was be strong being you, or be sexy being you, or be happy being you. So it's not necessarily that you have to appeal to any other type of expectation or sort of live up to any expectations, but you just learn to be happy in your own skin. And that's easier said than done too, because as people who read my blog will know, I've struggled with that whole thing myself. So, but it's only something now that I've really realized that grinding in myself and seeing the things that I like first of all, before really then leading on to a goal, because often the goals that we set ourselves are planted in something that's unattainable, or that it's coming from a negative feeling about herself. Like, you want to be leaner because you feel that you're not good enough as you are. But I would argue that there's probably a lot of things about you as you are that are pretty awesome. So recognize those first, and I think the rest is sort of falls into place after that. Even if you're not, you don't reach that scale number, you actually end up being happier, slightly above it. You don't drive yourself insane, is why you can't get down to that number on the scale. hope I didn't go off on a tangent there.
No, well, I think it's for everyone out there. This whole fitness thing. At the end of the day, it's about being healthier. It's about living longer. It's about having a more productive life. And at the end of the day, if you want to look a certain way, that's why, like, there was the kind of the complete opposite of this, or in the same category, people had nuclear meltdowns about Tracy Anderson again a couple weeks ago. Again, this is like the pros and cons of social media, where people on Facebook see something about Tracy Anderson and then they have, they freak out and, they get angry and stuff like that, where I kind of look at it as like, yeah, no, that was something that we discussed on the show a couple of years ago. But at the end of the day, some women want to look that way, whether that's, based on, social, or basically what like celebrities are looking like. They want to look like they're Gwyneth Paltrow, or because of social pressure and stuff like that. And my whole thing about all this stuff is just making sure that people keep in mind, if people want to look a certain way, that's great. If they want to be what is considered to be 30 pounds overweight, but they go to the doctor and they're in perfect health, they have no joint pain, they are able to pick their kids up off the ground or whatever, I think that is, is great. As long as they're happy and they're healthy, you don't have to necessarily look like a CrossFitter or look like, a bodybuilder or a power lifter or whatever. As long as at the end of the day, you you're okay with the way that you look. And, I guess it does kind of come down to making sure that you're happy the way you look naked to a certain extent, where you're not going to be angry at yourself for the way that you look.
I think, yeah, that's a good point. A lot of those, for example, the Tracy Anderson thing, if I see, I completely take on board that is, people want to look like that. I got a message once, a private message on Facebook about wanting to look like Tracy Anderson. And, well, sometimes I almost like want to go a bit deeper into that and like ask them why, because do they think they're actually going to look like her, or do they know really what that involves? Like, maybe they don't understand that Tracy Anderson looks like Tracy Anderson because she's Tracy Anderson. So if you're always looking outward and comparing yourself to somebody else and wanting to look like them, you're never, ever, ever going to be happy. I don't care how many programs and things that you go on, and you're just never going to be happy because you don't recognize what you have. Like, very often those types of goals, this is why people set these goals, is because they're not happy with how they look. And often, I don't know, like for me personally, those sorts of goals I initially set for myself was because I wasn't happy with who I was, really. It actually came from not just about how I looked. I thought if I changed how I looked, perhaps then, you'd gain some sort of approval, or some sort of like you'd feel more significant or something because you sort of fitted a mold. But I suppose over the years I've realized that you have to set your own mold, and you have to sort of just give what you've got, rather than having to always try to think that somebody else has got something better because they look like what they do. It doesn't make any sense. Like, if what I would say to her, that person, or what I did say to them was that just along those lines, but just to really examine why, and if it's something that she enjoys doing and she's enjoying the results that it's giving her body and how she looks, then that's the main thing. But never find your identity in that. So that's sort of how I look at it. And I see stuff and I'm just horrified whenever, that it makes my skin crawl whenever I see stuff like that. Because, I mean, with Tracy Anderson, this whole idea. But at the same time, when I speak to people about that, they believe so many myths that actually what they need is to understand what it means to be like Jesse Anderson, or what it means to do those sorts of things, what the difference is between maybe the type of training I do or the type of training we do, even get glutes or wherever else it is, to explain to them how it works. And if they understand that, often they can make a more informed decision. And information is so powerful. Often people don't have a clue, and they're just guessing based on how that person looks, that this is how they get results. But like, you know, even looking at those Fitspo pictures, like those are airbrush models. They're exceptionally probably water depleted. They look good for that particular moment, that particular shot, gets it, the right lighting and everything else. And probably the rest of the time they probably look pretty good, but in terms of that sort of look. But I mean, that's not representative of your typical person who's sort of fit and strong and stuff like that. So, and what is, so many questions, so many ways. We could probably talk about that for a whole series.
Well, yeah, I mean, I again, like we were talking about before, it's, you know, if you want to do whatever demographic of fitness, as long as you're becoming healthier and fitter, it's not hurting yourself, you know, doing kipping pull-ups and landing on your head, then go for it. You know, as long as you're being safe. Let's continue to kind of go forward. You know, another thing that people are always talking about, and had Dan John on a couple times in the last few episodes, talking about kettlebell training and kettlebell certification. And we did get some questions just asking about, you know, what your feelings are and your thoughts on kettlebell certifications. And if people need them to not only, you know, train other people, but just to do, you know, kettlebell exercises themselves.
It's a really good question. And I do get asked this from time to time. For my own practice, I started out, I got my certificate or my certification about 2 or 3 years ago, and it was a basic certification. Didn't cost that much money to get. It was the only one really in the UK, Ireland that was happening at the time, because everything seems to happen a little bit slower over here. So it was before HKC came here. It was before the RKC finally came here, but the IKFF. So I'll discuss what I did. And I got a basic certificate that covered the basic exercises that the way they taught it then. And since then, I mean, that got me covered in order to teach. So I was able to hold a class, or I was able to teach people how to use kettlebells. But it didn't give me continuing education in it. It didn't give me refining my technique. It didn't give me practice. So I had to do that. I had to, if I felt passionately about kettlebell training, I felt it was important to deliver quality information, quality workouts with good technique to my clients and to my online audience. So I was responsible for that. I was accountable for the information that I was giving. So that required me to be learning a lot, seeking. I went to workshops and things. Steve Cotter, he's been here a few times. And I spent time over in the States, and like, even though it was a short window of time, I learned a lot from Nigar Fanuni as well, who was our KC2. And you know, you learn a lot from the contacts and people that you have, other coaches. And I think no matter what we're talking about, whether it's kettlebells, whether it's barbells, you know, your Olympic lifts and things like that, the actual certification course will only cover so much. And so, like, it's really just a short amount of time. You've maybe got like 24-hour course, or, you know, it's over a weekend. And then what do? You have to practice, you have to learn, you have to build on that. And you get that from not necessarily just one resource, because I think, you know, if you get almost sucked into one way of thinking, but there's other methods out there that can add value to your training and to your teaching. So I'm actually glad that I just got a basic certificate in it, because the way I see it is a sort of, if I was to go to the same company now to get their current teaching, I'm sure it has changed from, or I would at least hope it had, because that's how things go. Things improve, things get more in depth, things get more structured and all of that. And all of their techniques have probably refined over the years, just as mine has. I'd say if you got, so I think it's important to say a certificate means that you are a little more qualified to teach. You learn a little bit more about the movements and the techniques that that particular company or whatever are using. And then you take that and build on it, and you can apply that then to your clients. In terms of learning or which certificate to get, there's other things that come into play there as well, because what does that, like those letters, perhaps if it's RKC or IKFF, what do those letters represent to you personally, and what value do they hold to the potential clients that you're going to have? Because RKC, people put behind their name, and I see it as being sort of almost typecast then as an RKC. So if you can't really veer off of that too much, because the expectations people hold of you are therefore within that realm. I've learned a bit from RKC. I've also learned a bit from Steve Cotter at IKFF. And I've sort of taken from that to sort of, I'm not saying that, it's just learning from them and applying that to my practice. So if I was to say which one to get, it's up to you, because they do cost money for one thing, and how often are you going to use it? Is it going to be your niche? Is that going to be your specialty? You're going to want to spend a little more in that and get a lot more information, but I wouldn't necessarily just go down one track. You might get your certificate on one track, but then learn about other ways, learn about all these other methods, because I've been told by the YouTube critics about my technique because it doesn't match Pavel's, but it matches what I was taught in a different workshop. So there's always variations of these things, and I think it's important to expose yourself to these, because otherwise I think you can get very closed off to other people's movements and all of that, the way that individuals will move and how other people teach. And then if you're wanting just to learn to use kettlebells at home, then why spend a whole lot of money on getting a certificate unless you're intending to use it to teach? Go to somebody who has been certified and has a good experience with it, not just that they've recently got their RKC or they've recently got this. They need to have a background in that. They need to have had the experience there too, because that refines what you've learned. And like I said, it's something that has to be continually built on. And if I had my certificate, like for example, my Olympic weightlifting certificate that I got 2 years ago, I haven't practiced my Olympic lifting. I haven't practiced teaching it. I have the certificate. Does that mean that somebody's going to come to me and I'm going to say, yeah, I'm a certified whatever. I'm going to be honest with them and say, look, I haven't practiced. I wouldn't be your best instructor for this. My specialty is probably more in kettlebells and barbell and bodyweight stuff. So if you want somebody who's better in this, then I would point them in the right direction, because another person who did that course with me at the time has probably done the same thing as I've done in my kettlebells. They've gone off and they've really got a passion for it. They're really learning more and applying that and building on it. So it's not just as simple as saying, I've got a bit of paper to say I've done it. You may have done it, but have you practiced? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think the best thing people can do is check out your videos and check out Dan John's videos, someone who is giving you great cues on how to perform the movements correctly. And really go from there. It's a huge bonus if you have someone in your area that does it, so you can do it in person. But I think the videos that you put together have been fantastic, and you know, I think that is the best place to start. Does not need to be overly complicated or necessarily treated like a religious experience. It just needs to be something that you do to, you know, add variation to your movement patterns and the things that you do in the gym. I like to think this is going to make sense for about three people who listen to the show, but like all the different kettlebell certifications, I look at it like the different divisions of professional / fake wrestling, where you had your WWF, your WCW, your TNA, your ECW, all these different, you know, great ways of professional wrestling. But if you just kind of find the one that clicks with you and it's, you know, a reputable source, go for it, man. Like there's no one needs to fight about this stuff. It's just exercise at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But before we wrap up, is there, obviously you're doing some great stuff over at the blog. Is there any upcoming posts or any recent posts that people should definitely keep an eye out for and check out?
Well, just any of them.
All of them.
All of them. Just spend your whole year looking through my stuff. No.
Just go to work and print all of them out. Just do it at work. Don't do it at home so you don't have to pay for the paper and ink.
Yeah, I think if it is kettlebells, on my YouTube channel, which you'll get to via my blog, it's also Kitty 8 Tim, as in Kitty, then 8 the number, and Tim. So just Marianne Kettlebells will probably bring it up. But there's a correction for the swing. It's tweak your swing, not your back. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the most common things that people will say when they first learn a swing is that it's hurting their back. So there's three helpful cues in that video that will help you really just clean up your kettlebell swing, because that's going to be the basis for a lot of the other exercises within kettlebell training. And that's one definitely to master. But no, I'm still working away and get glutes, which is an amazing, if I do say so myself, but we've put a lot of work into it and it's been really successful so far. We're now a month 10 of all the programs. So there's a really nice community building up over there, and very proud of all the people who have put in a lot of work in their programs. So it is worth checking out. That's getglutes.com. If sort of a strength training and more specific glute training and all of that is your interest, and having a little bit of community support, all three coaches are always involved in within the forums. You get your form checked if you want, all of that stuff. So that's getglutes.com. And obviously my own website will be sticking around a wee while. I'll probably be getting a wee bit of a revamp done soon. So I'll definitely be announcing that within the next few months. Other than that, just ticking over, I'm doing online training. So you can email me if you do want programs and things done. I do a lot of, I don't take on a lot of clients because I like to give people more individual attention. So I do make sure I limit my numbers. But definitely email me if you're interested and I'll see what I can do to help you there. And that's really it. If you want to email me, it's myomytv@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, Marianne, we'll definitely be talking to you more down the road. Make sure to check out the websites and blogs, YouTube channels. And until next time, don't forget, we're going to be having Tony Gentilcore on next episode. I'm sure he's going to be talking about something that hopefully it's not in reference to Star Wars or something crazy like that. It's mostly strength training and getting stronger. But always check out the FitCast on iTunes. Check us out at thefitcast.com. Thank you, as always, for your continued support. You can donate at thefitcast.com/donations and on the right side of the website. Again, Marianne, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure. Thank you.